Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Bismarck, North Dakota, and earned a bachelor's degree in history from Stanford University, and was a four-year letter winner in track and field. He then earned a master's and doctorate in educational policy and administration from the University of Minnesota. From 2005 through 2011, he was the athletics director at Oberlin College, and since 2013, he's been the director of athletics at Rice University. His name? Dr. Joe Carlgaard. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dr. Joe Carlgaard, the Director of Athletics at Rice University. Doctor, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thanks for having me, Jack. I appreciate it very much.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Sure. Well, I, as you mentioned, I grew up in Bismarck, North Dakota. My father was a high school athletics director for 30 years, and I was sort of the tag-along kid. My parents had four children, and I'm the youngest in the family by 12 years. So my siblings were all teenagers and beyond when I was born, and I ended up on my dad's hip for just about everything as I was growing up. And he was a high school AD and always at games, basketball games, wrestling matches, hockey games, football games, you name it. So I tell people that I went into the family business, but there's no equity in this type of business. So I really enjoyed my childhood. My dad really took it upon himself to include me in his life. My mom was a real estate agent and majored in English in college, and actually turned down an offer of admission at Stanford to stay home and get married to my father. And so the Stanford part of my background has been in our bloodstream for a long time. And I'm just very grateful to my parents. They just, I think, did an excellent job of including me in all aspects of their lives and equipping me with the tools to have some success later in life.
Joe, in the second grade, you wrote a paper saying that you wanted to be an athletic director to, quote-unquote, to help the world. Has that come true?
Well, you know, I think that, first of all, I don't know many kids that in the second grade aspire to be an athletics director, and so that paper is hanging up in my office right now, and people see it, and they're amazed, and then I tell them the story of my father, and then they understand. But, you know, I got into this line of work, one, because I love athletics. It had a powerful effect on my life. But, two, because I believe that there are lessons that we can teach in college athletics that equip young men and women to be great citizens and great contributors to the world. And so, yeah, I guess it is true. That is why I got into this. I do want to help change the world through this work.
You mentioned that your dad was athletic director in North Dakota in high schools for 30 years. And actually, in 1989 and 91, he was named National High School Athletic Director of the Year. So, Joe, what's the biggest thing Dad has taught you about being an athletic director?
Well, he taught me, I think, more than anything else, that whatever you choose to do with your life, do it with passion. And part of the reason that I'm doing what I'm doing now is that I watched my dad, as I was growing up, just have so much passion for his work, and it showed through in how happy an individual he was, and how excited he was to meet and help mold young people, to help mold coaches. And so, you know, I would say he taught me that more than anything. And I didn't always know that I wanted to do this. I mean, when I wrote that paper, my mind changed 20 different times between then and now. But I knew that whatever it was that I was going to pursue, it had to be something I was passionate about, and it turned out to be precisely what my father did.
Earlier you mentioned that a sure way not to get rich is to be a high school athletic director. Another thing is to be a high school coach.
Sure.
But talk to us about minimal salaries and the job they do for our young people in America.
Well, I think it's... I actually think it's unfortunate that our teachers and coaches aren't better paid. But I also think it attracts, that line of work attracts people who are truly dedicated to that profession, because you're not going to make a lot of money as a teacher and coach in high school. And so the people who end up doing that kind of work are people who are very genuine about it. And I think they just, when you're working with people of that age, you just have a tremendous opportunity to shape their lives and to teach them lessons. And I can go back and think about things that my coaches have done for me throughout my life, and it absolutely has shaped who I am. So I think they're doing some of the best work in this country in shaping the future of our young people.
You went to Stanford, so you leave Bismarck, North Dakota for Palo Alto. That's culture shock. You were Stanford 92 to 96. Why Stanford?
Well, it started with my mom thinking about going there and then ultimately not going there. Her brother, my uncle, ended up matriculating at Stanford. He sent one of his sons there. My older brother went there. It was something that was aspirational for me from the time I was very young. And it turned out that I had a reasonably good career as a high school track and field athlete. And Stanford noticed that and began to call me during my my senior year in high school. And it was something that really got me excited. And ultimately, it ended up working out for me. And Stanford was a transformational experience for me. And so I'm very grateful to have had that opportunity.
Stanford has this aura. They've got great athletics in so many different sports. They're entrepreneurial, the business people that have come out of there. How do you explain the greatness and the uniqueness of Stanford?
A lot of it, Jack, I think, is inertia. They've been good for so long, and they just continue to build upon that. Great minds are attracted, great athletes are attracted to the campus, and it has a way of perpetuating itself. And Stanford does a good job of not getting in its own way. They've been an incubator for the technology startups in Silicon Valley, and I think the tech startups have helped make Stanford better. So it's very much a kind of a symbiotic relationship that the community has with the university. I think it originally sort of fashioned itself as very different from the private elite higher education universities of England and the East Coast, in that it had more of an entrepreneurial flavor to it. And so, in this day and age when technology is such a big part of our society, I think that Stanford has just seized upon that to take itself to even greater heights.
We're talking to Dr. Joe Carlgaard. When we come back, we'll ask him how it was in 2005 at the age of 30. He becomes an athletic director at a Division III school. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Dr. Joe Carlgaard. In 2005, at the age of 30, he becomes the athletic director at a Division III school, Oberlin College. Joe, how did you ever get the job?
I was in the right place at the right time. I had followed my college track coach to Oberlin, a guy by the name of Vin Lanana, who decided that he didn't want to coach track anymore and wanted to get into administration, and accepted a job at Oberlin in 2003, 2004. and brought me in as one of his assistants in his second year. Then the folks at the University of Oregon called him and offered him their track and field job. So Vin spent 2 years outside of coaching, but when Oregon called, which arguably is the premier track and field program in the country, he couldn't say no. So he left Oberlin to take that job, and I was in the right place at the right time. Our president at that point was a fabulous woman by the name of Nancy Dye. She hired me to be the AD with no experience at age 30. She promptly retired about 6 months after she hired me. And so I, you know, she may have thought, well, I'm going to retire in 6 months. I don't want to go through the recruitment process. I think this guy has the potential to be a good AD for us. I never got the chance to ask her why exactly she made that hire, but I just feel really fortunate to have been in that place at that time, and it was a great incubator for me because at the Division III level in a school that's mostly known for its world-class conservatory of music and its great science programs, I could make a lot of mistakes early and recover from them without getting fired.
10 years later, Joe, you're the athletic director at a Division I school, Rice University. So what's the difference between being an AD at a Division III versus a Division
I? I think probably two-thirds to three-fourths of the job is very, very similar. The interactions that you have with student-athletes and coaches, the ways we go about trying to win, the emphasis on academics at a place like Oberlin and also at a place like Rice, all of those things are very similar. The interactions that I have with administration and the board, the campus sizes are very similar. I think the biggest difference between the two is that my budget at Oberlin was about $3.5 million, and all of it came from the college. And my budget at Rice, excluding athletic scholarships, is about $24 million, and I'm responsible for raising more than half of that. So the financial pressures associated with being in Division I are very different from being in Division III. But I would say that that's really where the differences begin and end. I find the jobs to be very similar outside of that.
In the 6 years you were with Oberlin, its North Coast Atlantic Conference All-Sports Trophy points total in four of those 5 years, set records. How did you, your coaches, and your student-athletes do it, Joe?
We really tried to focus on first identifying kids that would be great fits for Oberlin. We wanted kids who were willing to take chances, who were willing to take a little bit of a risk and assume a little bit of a risk, and who could dream with us. And so we spent a lot of time trying to identify those kids. Kids, that, the way we tried to frame it is, come be part of this great startup. It's a Division III athletics program, but it is like a startup. It's not like an established company. And so we were able to identify those kids. And then once we got them in, our coaches just did a fantastic job of training them, molding them, building them, and getting them to work together to yield great success. And they're having even more success now than they did when I was there, I think in part to many of those coaches and administrators still being there and carrying on that mission.
In 2011, you leave that job at Oberlin. You go back to Stanford as the Senior Associate Athletics Director for Development. How much money did they want you to raise?
Well, I came in at the end of their latest capital campaign. And so as we were closing out the campaign, we had opportunities for endowment, for capital projects, for annual funds. And we raised, I think we raised $52 million my second year there to close out the campaign. And that was very, very gratifying. But, you know, earlier in the show, we talked about Stanford and the success that they've had. I tell people that raising money at Stanford is like stepping onto a speeding locomotive. You get on and the thing is just moving at 100 miles an hour. And you step off and it keeps moving. And they continue to have success. I don't know how much I impacted it, but it was really a fun ride for 2.5 to 3 years.
Every one of these major universities, the demand for more money for the sports program, it's insatiable. Why?
Well, I think that part of it's the overlapping markets. You know, if you think about coaches, for example, you know, 20 years ago, colleges and universities were unable to pay their head coaches a salary that would keep them from making a jump to the professional ranks. So you'd see college basketball coaches jumping to the NBA. You'd see college football coaches jumping to the NFL. And with the latest TV contracts, many schools now have enough money to pay their coaches salaries that will prevent them from making those jumps. It's one of the reasons that Nick Saban had a brief dalliance with the NFL but came back to college football. And now he makes enough money where he'd probably have to take a pay cut to go to the NFL. Jim Harbaugh at Michigan is the same. And so, you know, I think as long as these revenues come and you have these overlapping markets, coaches will continue to make this money. It's concerning because I think that the bottom half of Division I, actually probably 80% of Division I, is going to get separated from the top 20% that are able to accrue these revenues at a very rapid rate. And when you have that sort of separation in revenues, you're going to have a clear separation in competitiveness. And the pro leagues deal with this via collective bargaining and luxury taxes. And college athletics hasn't figured that out yet.
Another phenomenon is coaching endowments. At Stanford, they have, I believe, 19 such endowed positions. Talk to us about coaching endowments.
Well, at Stanford, we thought this was a wonderful approach, and it was something that started in the 1950s with scholarship endowments. And you know, the basic math around an endowment is you put some funds in place that are invested, and you harvest about 5% of the return every year. So, you know, if a scholarship, if you put $1 million in for a scholarship, for example, you're going to get in year one, hopefully about $50,000 in return. And if your investment returns are greater than that, then you take whatever's left and you reinvest it into the principal and you get an even greater return the following year. And so at Stanford, what we decided to do after we finished raising money for scholarships was, hey, let's start looking at coaching positions, similar to the way that the academic side looks at endowed chairs, and let's start putting funds in place that will yield returns to help pay coaches' salaries. So Stanford's done just a phenomenal job of this with 19 of these positions endowed, and you know, we're trying to do that here at Rice, and a lot of places are beginning to do this as well, and you know, it's got some permanency to it, which I think athletic departments and universities really like.
When we come back, we'll ask Dr. Joe Carlgaard how it was in 2013 he became director of athletics at Rice University. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Dr. Joe Carlgaard. Joe, how was it 2013? You leave Stanford, you become athletic director of athletics at Rice University, please.
Well, I'd come to Stanford to work for and with Bob Bowlsby, and Bob had been the athletics director at Iowa for many years before coming to Stanford and was widely regarded as one of the top two or three ADs in the country. And I felt it would be a great opportunity for me to mentor under somebody who had a lot of experience in the business. And I had been there about a year and a half, and Bob left Stanford to become the commissioner of the Big 12 Conference, where he currently is. And Stanford brought in a fantastic new athletics director in Bernard Muir. Bernard had a very different background and perspective than Bob did, and I worked for Bernard for another year or year and a half and learned very different things from him than I did from Bob. But at that point, I began to think it might be time for me to look for a Division I athletics director position. It just so happened that Rice had opened, and it's an institution that shares a lot on the academic side with Stanford. And there are actually a number of alumni who hold undergraduate degrees from Rice and graduate degrees from Stanford who had lived in the Bay Area and contributed to the athletics program. I got to know these people and thought they were fantastic. I asked them about the university and what they thought Rice needed at the time. And then I just went through the process, and it proved to be a really good match for me, for my family. And so I started here in October of 2013 and have really enjoyed the experience.
You're in Houston. The university was formed in 1912. Tell us about Rice University.
Well, Rice is, I think, the smallest or second smallest university in the football bowl subdivision of Division I. We have 3,800 undergraduate students, about 6,000 total students. We have only one professional school, a business school. We have no law school, no medical school. Our campus is about 300 acres. We are a top 20 U.S. News and World Report national university. We're a member of the AAU. It's just a tremendous, high-achieving place. We're private, and we attract students from all over the country and the world. So I told the search committee during the process of interviewing for this position that I really thought Rice was a great combination of my experiences at both Oberlin and Stanford. Oberlin in the sense that it's a very small community and tight-knit community where the focus is on undergraduate education. And Stanford in the sense that it's got a worldwide reputation and it aspires to be excellent on the research side as well. And so I thought my background was ideally suited to being the athletics director here. And in my 2+ years here, I've found the match to be tremendous.
www.riceowls.com. You've got 14 varsity sports, 8 on the men's side, 8 on the women, and you're part of Conference USA. Tell us about Conference USA.
Well, Conference USA has really evolved since its beginnings more than 10 years ago. It started off as primarily a basketball conference, and several of the schools that are in the Big East and ACC had been in Conference USA. Marquette, Cincinnati, Louisville were all in Conference USA at one point. Then the conference decided to add football. Houston, SMU, Tulane, Texas Christian, Rice all joined the conference. And then during the last round of realignment in 2010, a number of schools joined the Big East, which became the American Conference. So Conference USA has been an evolving conference over its history. And now the membership is stretches from El Paso all the way to Norfolk, Virginia, with Old Dominion. So it's got a big geographic footprint, but it's primarily based in the southeast United States.
Baseball is probably historically your most successful sport. You won the College World Series in 2003. You came in third both in 6 and 7. You've made 7 appearances to the College World Series. Tell us about the baseball program.
Well, baseball has really made its mark both on campus and nationally here at Rice. Coach Wayne Graham came here in the early 1990s, and his idea for the baseball program was we will make no excuses. There is enough talent in Harris County, Texas, which is where Houston is located, that and enough bright individuals that can gain admission to Rice that we can be very, very successful. And he's proven just that. He's also a great developer of talent. We've consistently had very good pitching staffs. We've developed field players into major league stars. And baseball is something that we're very, very proud of. It's a big deal in our community. It's something we look forward to each year. I told folks when I got to Rice in 2013 that when Rice won the College World Series in 2003, they defeated my alma mater, Stanford, for that title. And for 10 years, I was very upset about that. But when I got the job here, I got to be happy about it finally.
In 2014, you published your vision for Rice Athletics. and you listed four key principles. Can you tell us about your vision for Rice Athletics, please?
Sure. Well, most folks will tell you that when you start a position like this, any leadership position, that you should spend some time on a listening tour. And the conventional wisdom is 90 days. You spend the first 90 days just talking to folks and listening. And so I did that, but 90 days actually turned into about 6 months. I wanted to really make sure that I understood what was important to our community, where there was some consensus, and what people felt was important for the future. And so I did that for the first 6 months, and then I started to test notions around a vision statement with some pillars and goals for our future. And so we did that, and I got some feedback from our trustees, from our president, from key alumni, and eventually we settled on something. And so, you know, our pillars are really built around athletic competitiveness, the academic side of things, making sure that you know, our kids are graduating and achieving at a high rate academically, that we're teaching them the life education that will help them be productive for the next 40, 50, 60 years and beyond, and that we're doing all of this within the value system of this campus and community. So those are the four pillars that we really think about when we're making decisions in this department, and it was something that didn't come from me so much as it came from our community.
Talk to us, Joe, if you will, about the life of a collegiate student-athlete today.
Well, I think it's probably busier than it's been at any time in the history of college athletics. I think young people today, particularly at Rice, they want to achieve the very best in every aspect of their life. And so, you know, they spend a lot of time not just in the classroom and studying and on research projects and in the lab, but they spend extra time in the gym working on their shots. They spend extra time in the training room stretching and getting massage therapy. They spend extra time in the weight room getting stronger and faster. And so it really is a lifestyle that's different from most other students. And that's not to say that there aren't other valuable and intense things that you can do as a student on a college campus. But I do think that college athletes are well equipped for a busy life during their 4 years here, because every moment that they're awake is spent scheduled doing something. And typically the two things that they spend the vast, vast majority of their time on are in the classroom and on the field.
We're talking to Joe Carlgaard, Director of Athletics at Rice University. If you want to learn more, www.riceowls.com. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasul. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dr. Joe Carlgaard, who grew up in Bismarck, North Dakota, and 40 years later, he's the director of athletics at Rice University. Joe, how many of Rice's sporting events will you attend this year?
That's a great question. I try to get to as many as I can. I'm at every football game, both home and road. I go to every home basketball game, both men and women. I try to get to as many volleyball and soccer matches as I can. We're rarely home in golf and rarely home in track and field and swimming, so I always try to get to at least one of those a year. But I would say if the number is in the hundreds, I'm sure.
Week after week, you have a last-minute win or a last-minute loss. How do you manage these highs and lows?
You manage them better the older you get. I remember a moment right after I had started back at Stanford in 2011, and we were in the women's Final Four in Indianapolis. We were playing Texas A&M in the semifinals, and it was a really close game. And my emotions were getting to me. I was excited and down in the dumps and excited and down in the dumps, up and down and up and down. And I looked over at Bob Bowlsby, and he was even keel. And I said, how do you do it? how do you manage this? I mean, this, I've been here a month, and already it's my heart's beating faster and my palms are sweaty, and how do you make this work? And he said, 30 years of experience, Joe. And I found that to be true for me. We always have to take the long view. We have to look at this as a journey and not as any sort of destination. And so even though we have some things that are going on that are really exciting and some things that don't go our way, we always have to keep our eyes on the horizon and be looking out for what's next.
Talk to us, if you will, Joe, about the seemingly never-ending renovations and or new facilities at every major university's sports department.
Well, it's it is never ending. You've seen things around the student side, things that are centered on the student athlete and trying to assist with his or her development. And then you've seen things on the fan side, more suites, more premium seating options, party decks, clubs, those sorts of things. And I think it's driven by two things. One is some of the renovations are designed to help the athletics department and the university profit, and some of them are designed to ostensibly make the student-athlete experience better and more meaningful. And at Rice, our position is we want to have good facilities. We want to have facilities in the athletics department that are on par with our classrooms and labs and residence halls. We're not striving for opulence here, though. We want to have facilities that are functional and that work and that serve our kids and serve our fans. And I think that stops short of what some other institutions are doing.
In July of this past year, you signed a contract with Striver Labs, a virtual reality firm, and you became one of a handful of universities to go jump on board with this leading technology. What is it, and why did you do it?
Well, it's immersive technology where you wear a headset and you're able to become part of the action. We really purchased it primarily for our football program, although it does have applications to other sports as well. And what Striver allows you to do is it allows you to go out and film scout team defense put your quarterback and your running backs and your wide receivers in positions where they can make reads in real time via virtual reality. And the benefit to this is multifaceted. One is that you don't have to have an entire team in the facility at the same time to practice. So a quarterback can come in by himself, put the headset on, and go through his progressions for the upcoming weekend's game. It also, I think, takes some of the contact aspects that are associated with football out. So if you're going through and running through scout team plays via virtual technology or virtual reality, you're not putting yourself in a position where you're getting hit repeatedly. And I think that it will continue to evolve. And as I said, it's being embraced now in basketball and hockey and soccer and baseball and other sports as well.
Your actual title at Rice is Director of Athletics, Recreation, and Lifetime Fitness. Talk to us, Joe, if you will, about lifetime fitness.
We have a number of physical education courses here. We have a great rec center. We have club sports like rugby and ultimate frisbee and rowing. We have a pretty robust intramural program, too. And part of my job is to make sure that our students on this campus are engaged in physical activity. It's a great skill set, and hopefully we can ignite passion in these kids now and equip them with something that they can carry through for the rest of their lives. Just as you would ask a student to come in and who's maybe majoring in English and ask them to take a math course or ask them to take a science course, I think it's very healthy for us to bring kids in and ask them to do something with their bodies, because your bodies are going to matter to you for the rest of your life. And so that's part of my purview as well, aside from varsity athletics.
If a mom or dad is listening tonight and they say, my son, all he wants to do is play these video games, I can't get him to get out and exercise, What do you tell mom?
I think you have to make it enjoyable. I think too many times exercise is viewed as stressful, strenuous, and it can be. But I think for the inactive young person, we have to find ways to make it fun. And, you know, most kids, when they're 5, 6, 7 years old, run around. They like to play tag, capture the flag, different games that they make up on the fly. And I think we can take some of those principles and apply them to kids in their teenage years as well to make it enjoyable.
Most people don't realize it, but Houston is our nation's fourth largest city. Tell us about Houston, Texas.
Houston's a wonderful community. It's a diverse community. It's very international. It's the energy capital of the world, primarily rooted in oil and gas, but now progressing to renewable technologies and other technologies as well. I was really concerned, never having lived in Texas, about moving from Northern California here and not fitting in. But truth be told, Houston is a community that embraces outsiders very well. And so you see a lot of people coming from overseas to live in Houston, people from all parts of the United States coming and living here and finding great community here.
As our time winds down this evening, what advice would you give to our young listeners, please?
I think the key, as you get older and go through college and start looking for a mate, start looking for a job or a career, is to be authentic. For me, as I go through and I look at hiring new coaches or we're recruiting student athletes, I think part of the way that we need to position ourselves at Rice is we need to be honest and authentic with kids. This is what the experience is going to be like with coaches. This is what you're going to be stepping into. And conversely, I think, you know, when they're interacting with each other, authenticity is key. You're going to get more out of your life and you're going to be happier if you can be yourself. So that'd be the advice I'd give to all our young listeners.
Joe Carlgaard, what a golden future you have. Keep making mom and dad proud every day.
I appreciate it very much, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Prasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall. Believe in me.